Hey, indie filmmakers, I'm Griffin Hammond at the Dances with Films Festival.
I'm Nick Bodmer, and on this week's episode, I find out how Griffin's film festival experience is going.
Plus, we're answering your questions about using Creative Commons music, deep focus versus infinity focus, and raising funds for your film.
Griffin, you are at the film festival.
Yeah, I'm actually in the movie theater right now, so it may be a little bit noisy.
That's okay, that's cool. How did it go? Have you had your showing yet?
Yeah, at 5 p.m. today, I had the Los Angeles premiere of Hand Cut on a big, giant movie theater screen. It was really cool.
Sweet. Did they play it in 60p, 4K?
No, they played it in 1080, 30p. That's the limitation of cinema projectors.
Well, no, that's okay, though. That's okay, though.
Yeah, no, it still looked great. People, there's one part where people laugh, because it's not really like a funny film, but can you guess where people laugh?
Is it the shaking dog?
It is the shaking dog. And that, it's funny, it works in every culture. I just played the film at a bunch of workshops in Asia, and some of them were big audiences, like 200 people, and some were smaller workshops, like 40 people. But everyone laughed when that shot popped up.
I just feel bad for the poor little dog. He looks like he's freezing.
He doesn't have to be in there. He runs around different rooms. He likes to be in there with the humans.
All right. Well, whatever floats his boat, I guess.
Yeah. You should see the setup I have for this shot right now. I'm up on like the second floor of... This is actually the TCL Chinese Theater, the famous Chinese theater.
The famous one.
Yeah, in Hollywood.
Yeah. We went and saw that when we shot Sriracha, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Sriracha premiered here. It had its LA premiere here in 2014. So I'm back at this festival again. It's nice to be an alum. But I'm up on the second floor of this theater getting a shot overlooking the lobby. And I had to bring a couple chairs up here. I'm using one chair to be my light stand. The light is a little bit lower than I would probably like, but I have the Pedco Ultra Clamp attached to a chair.
Ding.
Ding, Pedco. And it's actually... You know, I'm using a pretty wide-open lens, f1.6 right now, so I don't need very much light. I'm only using, like, 10% brightness on this thing. But then where it gets really interesting, and I'll have to show a picture of this, is I knew I would need the mic pretty close to myself because it's kind of noisy here. And I wanted to mount it to the tripod but knew that wouldn't get me close enough. So I have the one Pedco Ultra Clamp holding the Zoom H5. And it's recording the audio, I think. Let's see. Yep, that's recording. And then I've actually attached a second Pedco Ultra Clamp to the Zoom H5 just to use the Zoom itself as like an extender. And then that's what's holding the shotgun mic. So I'm getting the shotgun mic as close as I can without having to put my body too close to the tripod.
All right, I will need a picture of this eventually.
You have to see this.
Do you have a shot for the audience here? Yeah, will it be in the video?
I'll shoot it afterward, and through the magic of editing, you'll be seeing it right now. And if you're listening to the podcast, you can just go to Hey.Film, and you'll see a photo of this.
That's funny. Hey, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, I got to travel light. Right now, I'm doing this all out of my like smallest backpack, the Lowepro Photo Hatchback 16L.
And you are like you're on your way back from your Asia trip, right? You have not been home to New York yet.
Right. Yeah, I'm really missing Amy at home, and I. but the
you gotta
timing.
Just be so tired.
Yeah, I'm kind of exhausted, but it helped that I had like one rest day at the end in Bangkok, and it was nice just to spend a day not having to do workshops, and that really like got my energy back up.
Well, that's good.
The timing worked out really well that I would have had to fly through LA anyway, and so I landed in LA on Sunday, and the screening here is Monday, so I just stayed an extra day just so I could see my film and do the Q&A, and then I'll move on.
So how was the Q&A?
It went really well, but the weird thing about Q&As is, especially in shorts programs, is that they bring up all the filmmakers. Have you ever done one of these? Been to one?
No, I haven't. I should, but I haven't.
I mean, if you ever go to any film festival screening, like for a feature film, then the director will go up and maybe some of the cast, and they'll have a bunch of people on stage. But it's one film, and they can field all the questions from the audience about that one film. For a shorts program, it gets pretty weird because they bring up all the filmmakers. You know, there were 7 films in this program, so there's at least 7 directors up there, and in many cases, they bring up their audio guy and the cast, too. So there's a lot of people standing up there. And you can only do a Q&A for 20 minutes. So I feel a little bit awkward in those situations because I don't want to ever be hogging the microphone. And so they kind of like, they go down the whole line answering the same questions. Like, what was your inspiration for the film? That's always the first question.
I'm always waiting to see what interests my curiosity. And I was just at a bar with my wife and saw the giant block of ice behind the bar and thought, where does that come from? How do they make it so clear and wonderful? So I just explored that.
So I kept my answer really short because I don't want to be the guy that's like, I had the shortest film in this program and I'm going to really tell
I'm
you.
I'm going to talk for 20 minutes.
Right. But I'm not sure I said anything particularly exciting.
What are some of the challenges that you guys face in making a movie?
For me, my deadline was really tight on the film. I was given a pre-production camera by Panasonic, and so I only had 1 week to shoot before I had to edit and I had to turn the thing around in 2 weeks. So it just meant that a lot of people weren't willing to say yes, or they would say, yeah, you could film next month, but that just wouldn't fit my timeline. So documentary is already hard trying to convince people that you're credible as a filmmaker, that they should participate, and then just adding that extra layer of, I didn't get everyone in the film that I wanted in the film, and I filmed different things that I would have filmed if I had a month to do it.
Did you see any podcast listeners out there in the world?
I have run into people here, yeah, that listen to the podcast. And actually, the weirdest thing about being in California was the very first thing I did was go to In-N-Out Burger, which I always do when I'm here in Los Angeles.
Always, yeah.
And the first thing that happened is I sit down, get my burger, and this guy next to me is kind of like looking at me. I could tell, and I don't know why. He's looking at me for a while. And then finally,
you're a weird guy.
Yeah. I'm like, do I have something on myself? But then finally he just goes, hey, are you Griffin Hammond? And I was like, yeah. And he said, I love the podcast.
Oh, awesome. Well, hello, listener.
Yeah.
Did and this, you order a burger and fries animal style off the secret
menu? I did get a double-double animal style and a chocolate shake.
Delicious. Just delicious.
But this happened all over Asia. There were definitely fans that came to the workshops, but there were also people that, like, didn't know who I was at first, but maybe they knew Indie Mogul or they had listened to the podcast. They just didn't, you know what I look like or something.
Well, they should watch it on YouTube, my preferred place to watch the podcast.
Yeah.
So, well, what else you got?
I mean, that's what's going on in my world. You've actually made a decision this week.
Made a decision, so I appreciate all the feedback we got. We got a lot of really good feedback. I did decide to get the G85.
Yeah,
I'm very excited about it.
More than double priced GH5 that I have.
That's right. Now, in my hemming and hawing, it did go out of stock everywhere.
Oh no!
So it has not shipped yet, but it's supposed to be in soon. So I ordered it from B&H.
Yeah,
it just seemed like the place to do it. So I got the G85 with the 12-60 kit lens, and my
plan
is...
So this is not the new Leica 12-60.
Right,
It's like the kit, which I don't know much about that lens.
It's just a Panasonic. It's an f3.5-5.6, I think. Just really not fast enough for what I do.
Right, that's kind of like the first kit lens we had was that 14-140mm,
which
is
an
amazing range. It's great for events, but it's an f4-5.8?
Something like that, or yeah, 4-6 or something like that, 5-8, it's very close. And actually, that reminds me of a question for you that you may or may not know the answer to.
Yeah.
So this weekend, I watched your How to Set Up the GH5 video, which was really good, by the way. I thought that was excellent.
Well, thank you.
I figured it would be very similar to the G85, so I thought maybe I should watch it and see.
Yeah, you're right.
And you said that... if you use a lens with optical image stabilization and you've turned off the switch on the lens, it will disable the in-body image stabilization as well?
Yes. At least that's how it works on the GH5.
Now, that 14-140 lens has what they call mega optical image stabilization, which is not supported for the dual image stabilization.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking, like, can I turn off the lens stabilization and leave the in-body on, or is that going to force it off?
No, you should.
Because they obviously, you can't have them both on at the same time, or they're going to interfere with each other since they can't talk.
That's interesting that they can't talk to each other. I guess it's just like an older lens and...
Well, yeah, I mean, we got it with the GH1, so how old is it?
Oh, yeah. And for a second, I thought you were talking about the kit lens. And I was like, why would they ship a kit lens that doesn't... I'm talking about our oldest lens.
The old 14 to 140. Yeah, yeah. It's such a versatile lens to have all that range that I've kept it all this time, even though it's small.
I assume it works similar on the G85. But what happens on the GH5 is if I switch off the switch on the lens for OIS, mm-hmm. it turns off the whole thing. And you can tell because it goes from... It has a little symbol on screen that says dual IS, and mm-hmm. then it just switches to like a red, like no image stabilization icon. But if you leave that on and go into the menu instead, you have an option to, I believe, turn off.
Woo! What's the party going on?
There's a wooing behind me. It's the red carpet here is actually not a red carpet at Dances with Films. It's a green carpet, and I actually can't remember why. I think it's because green was, like, cheaper than red when the festival started 20 years ago. But people are taking, like, their step-and-repeat photos. Do you know that phrase, step-and-repeat?
No.
It's that thing behind the red carpet often, like the backdrop with all the sponsor logos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the idea is, like, you walk on it, step. And repeat, because photographers are going to ask you to keep taking photos. I think that's why it's called a step and repeat.
Gotcha.
So they're over there taking photos.
Well, they're having fun, and I'm glad.
Yeah. I think there may be like a premiere happening in the next 30 minutes or an hour, so people are starting to arrive and get excited.
All right, well, let's blast through this then. Yeah. So, in conclusion, I should be able to turn off the lens stabilization in the menus and leave IBIS on.
Confuses me, because I'm trying to remember... Because I feel like if you didn't turn off the switch on the lens, it's always going to want the Mega OS OIS on. So I don't know what the combo is.
Why don't we ask our friends at Panasonic and find out? Because this is the first... They did come out with a second generation of this lens, which after a firmware update would be dual IS compatible. But this one's
we have the oldest one? Okay.
The oldest one. So let's find out and get back to our audience about
that.
And more importantly, me. Because if it won't work with IS, I might just have to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Did you hear about Apple's new iMac Pro they announced today?
I actually haven't seen the specs. I knew they were going to announce some stuff. But real quick, did they announce anything? I'm sure they announced a bunch of things, but did they announce like a new MacBook Pro or anything?
A ton of their lineup got at least some kind of update. So all the iMacs, all the MacBook Pros, the MacBook, all got updates of some kind. Usually, mostly just speed bumps.
Are they still updating the MacBook Pro that has... Like the legacy one that has like USB and Thunderbolt?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay, so if I want a fully souped up new MacBook Pro, I'm going to have to get the one with just USB-C and no SD card slot?
Yep.
Yeah. That's the big thing that keeps me from doing it, is that like I do all these workshops where I need HDMI out and I need an SD card slot and I need my Thunderbolt ports for my hard drives. And sure, I could get a dongle for all that, but...
I got a great little dongle. It has two Thunderbolt 3 things, and it's a solid brick of aluminum, and it slides in. It almost looks like it's matched perfectly with the aluminum case.
Yeah.
And then it has two USB-A's, it has HDMI, it has two USB-C's, and an SD card reader. So it works really well.
That's just one more thing I have to carry, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So tell me about this new iMac, then.
Okay, so iMac Pro. A lot of people have been criticizing Apple for not having...
Oh, wait, so that's what it's called, iMac Pro.
It's called the iMac Pro.
It's like in between an iMac and a Mac Pro.
Exactly. So, you know, they have their Mac Pro that they haven't updated in like 3 or 4 years, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the Mac Pro has their workstation class gear, so like Xeon processor, ECC RAM, all the stuff that the pros want, right? And that's where you can get the tons of cores, so you can get like 16-core processors.
Yeah.
Which are great for video editing, because you know you can transcode super fast because that parallelizes really well. Well, this iMac Pro uses those workstation components, so you can get like a 16-core Intel Xeon processor. You can get 128 gigs of ECC RAM, all in an iMac, you know, form factor with that beautiful 5K screen. So I think they're going to be very popular with the super high-end people.
Yeah,
You know, they start at $5,000, so they're and that's then go up from there. So they're going to be very pricey, but I think they're going to make a lot of people really happy who do.
Yeah,
video editing, 3D rendering.
Yeah, a lot of people that do this professionally and people that work in offices and businesses that'll pay for it, then they'll sell a lot of those.
Yeah, and Apple also announced a ton of VR support in their operating system, so I think it'll be great for people who do VR type stuff as well.
Cool.
Yeah, so I think it's cool. I won't buy one, I'm too cheap, but I love it.
Yeah. I could use a new MacBook Pro though, so maybe I need to update to the...
Ooh, other thing they announced, it sounds like they're going to be supporting external GPUs. So that means you can buy your laptop, right? And then buy a box that has a really high-end video card in it. And so when you're out and about, it's just mobile and portable. When you get to your desk at home, you plug in your external GPU and you have a huge GPU powerhouse. So it's like having an iMac with a big GPU in it.
Wow.
So that'll be cool too.
Yeah.
I'm an Apple nerd. Well, should we answer some questions real quick before you get shouted down there at the festival?
I guess first I just want to tell people that if you live in Kazakhstan, I'll be there next week, June 16th to 18th at the Go Viral Festival. And then I'm going to be in Australia in July. So if you are in Sydney or Perth, I'm speaking at the SMPTE trade show in Sydney. That's July 18th through 20th. And then I'll be at Photo Live Expo in Perth on July 23rd.
How many miles are you logging on airplanes in 2 months? I mean, you have gone halfway around the world and back 3 times.
Yeah, a lot of mileage. Luckily, most of it's happening on my preferred Delta carrier, so I can really rack up the points.
Sweet
on that
points.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got an email from Clint,
and
he was wondering, how do you narrow down Creative Commons tracks for each project? The amount of music is a bit overwhelming. Any tips or suggestions to find the right track without listening to everything? Search tricks, perhaps? This is a really good question.
That's
I have this
question.
Problem all the time.
Yeah, I was wondering, how often are you looking through Creative Commons music?
I mean, not a ton, but it certainly happens, and... usually I just give up and I pick a track that you've previously picked for another video that I like. So how do you do it? You listen to a lot of music would be my guess.
I do. And I like I like that part of editing. I get inspired by music. So I probably listen to more than I should because I just enjoy that part of it. And I used to do it a lot with Creative Commons, and now I'm kind of doing it with these audio libraries that I have access to, like Jingle Punks and Audio Network. But the process is the same. I usually start by looking for the kind of genre I might be interested in. Like, is it electro kind of EDM kind of music, or is it like Mumford & Sons style music? I can usually start with genre. And once I listen to a few things, I start to realize what it is about the music that I want. It's like, oh, I really want piano, or I really want acoustic guitar. So I can often, some of these websites let you search by instrumentation. So I might start to apply a few different filters. And if it's Creative Commons, you apply filters of like, I need stuff that's allowed for commercial work if I'm going to monetize this on YouTube. And I need stuff that's maybe attribution only, where as long as I give attribution to the artist, it's okay. So some of these websites, like I think Free Music Archive will let you sort by Creative Commons type.
You just listed a bunch of sites. Could you maybe put those in the show notes? Because I honestly don't know
half
of those
you just said. I'll put a bunch of places that I look for free music and Creative Commons music in the show notes at hey.film.
And the ones you have access to, are those really expensive or are those reasonably priced?
You know, I don't even know how they're priced because I had access to them through Bloomberg, and I also have access to them through being a YouTube creator. They were given to me. I don't know what the subscription cost is for those things. And it probably varies on your organization's usage.
Yep.
But a lot of times when I find an artist I like, it's reliable that same artist is going to have great music. So like on Audio Network, for example, there's an artist named Terry Divine King. I think it's a he, and he makes great stuff. So I find myself returning to artist over and over again.
Cool.
And for Creative Commons, there's an artist I like called Chris Zabriskie, so I'll link to his work, too.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Our next question is an email from David, who asks if there's a way to adjust focus on an external attached monitor or on the LED monitor on the GH5, just like you can adjust the diopter through the viewfinder. He's wondering if you can do the same thing for an LCD because he wears glasses. And I actually have no idea.
I have no idea. I'm going to say no would be my guess. I mean,
right, logically,
adjusting
it doesn't seem
that
like you could.
It's a lens in front of a screen, so you're adjusting that lens.
Exactly. I feel like if you were able to put a lens in front of an LCD, then yeah, you could adjust the focus.
And maybe somebody makes an accessibility thing like that, like reading glasses for a screen, but I think that would be pretty niche. Nothing that I know of.
I realize I've known you this long, and I know that you wear glasses, but I don't even know what you're... Are you nearsighted or farsighted?
Breaking my heart. Breaking my heart.
It stems from the fact that I don't even quite understand those terms. I barely understand.
I don't either. I think I'm nearsighted, which means I need my glasses to see stuff that's far away.
Okay.
So I think that's how it works. I always get it backwards, but I'm
pretty
sure that's
right. So it does not affect your... You can take your glasses off, and you'll look at an LCD on a camera, and you're fine.
That's correct. Yeah. I can still read my screen. Yes, indeedy. So we got an email here from Austin. Looks like he is producing a short film this summer and is wondering about raising money on crowdfunding sites and also through private sources, like getting investors. What do you think, Griffin?
Well, yeah, I think he talks about both the potential of doing feature films and shorts. I think with shorts, it makes more sense to try to come up with the money yourself or find investors, because I don't know how I would crowdfund a short film. I don't know if I could expect an audience of people on the internet to be particularly excited about paying for a short film in advance. I mean, well, mm-hmm. Sriracha was a short film, but at least it was a longer short. I guess it depends on the length. Like, I can't imagine trying to crowdfund a 5-minute film.
Yeah.
Unless, I mean, and if the perks are really good or if you have people that are really excited to back you. But I think regardless which route you go, if you're going to do crowdfunding, you just need to price it appropriately. Like, think about, would you back at a $5 level or $20 level? Like, I'm probably not going to back someone's film for $20 or $30 if it's only 5 minutes long.
Sure. Makes sense.
And I suppose the same goes for investors. I've actually never asked for anyone to, like, be an angel investor on my project, but they have to believe that it's worthwhile, that you're a credible filmmaker, and that they either expect to get some money out of it at the end, which doesn't happen a lot with films, so that's probably unlikely, but hopefully they believe in the project and you enough and want to see you succeed that they'd be willing to help.
Griffin, don't ever ask me for money.
I don't know if I'd be very good at asking for money from investors.
Oh, man.
And I mean, obviously keeping the price down. The lower it is, the less you have to ask for people for money. That makes it easier for everyone to swallow.
Yep. And you can do so much on such a shoestring budget these days.
In fact, I ran into a guy here, the photographer at the Dances with Films Festival, is a fan of Indie Mogul. He's seen my work, and he actually built the DIY light that I built years ago, that $80 light you can build yourself.
Which I need right now, because my lighting is bad. So bad. But I don't care.
All right, so here's an email from Sean, who says that he's been doing a lot of run-and-gun wedding filmmaking, and he's wondering, now that he wants to do like a bigger documentary, if he should kind of change his style and do something like more stylized and a little bit bigger than run-and-gun. But I guess he's just kind of wondering, like, does that make sense to change up his style and I guess how to make that transition?
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to do a long-term project, you're probably going to put a little bit more thought into what you're doing. I know you did some scripting and outlining for Sriracha, which I think really gave you a foundation when you went in. But I think a lot of your run-and-gun stuff really applied still. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, to his point, if he normally does weddings, and that's a quick turnaround, and you don't have... I mean, you're shooting it all in one day. If, depending on his subject matter for the documentary, he may be able to work on this a lot longer, and maybe he can bring some different gear and change up the style a little bit. But I also think you should do what you do well. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that filmmaking is a great opportunity to exploit your unique talents and hide the things you don't do well. There's plenty of things I do badly, and I just edit those out, and I don't showcase that in my films. So if Run and Gun works for you, I think it works for me. I just fully embrace that for documentary. It means that I can be less obtrusive when I show up to shoot a film, and I can probably get some access that I maybe wouldn't if I'm bringing in lots of lights and gear and stuff.
Yep.
I guess just make the film that you're good at making, and don't, you know, you don't want to challenge yourself. Just making a film will be challenging. That'll push you, but I wouldn't try to completely change your style.
We've got an email from Christoph. He says he's new to the GH4 and he's been watching tutorials and tips for the camera, but he's got a question. His GH4 is displaying gain values in decibels rather than ISO in video mode. He wants to know, how can he switch back to displaying ISO instead of dB?
Did you know this? Did you know that the GH4, I don't know about the GH3, but the GH4 and the GH5 can do shutter angle or shutter speed, and they can do gain or ISO.
You know, I think I did, because I think you briefly mentioned it in that GH5 setup video I just watched.
Yeah, you did just watch it.
I really did just watch it a few days ago, so I did know that now.
Somehow I didn't even know that was on the GH4. I thought it was a new feature on the GH5, and then realized everyone was already doing it. I find it useful for shutter angle, because I've been using shutter speed forever, but if you don't want to think about your shutter speed, you can just set it to shutter angle, and as long as you're on 180 degrees, whatever frame rate you shoot in, it'll automatically shoot the correct, or whatever frame rate you're in, it'll shoot the right shutter speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also does gain or ISO. So if you're not a photographer, if you come from a video background and you are just more comfortable with gain, the idea that you boost the gain to do better in low light situations instead of ISO, same idea, but you can have the camera display either. And that's just a setting in the menu. It's called like SS gain operation.
SS gain operation, Christoph. That's what you're looking for.
This is from Brian. And so I had a little bit of back and forth with Brian, because at first he was asking about setting infinity focus. And he was wondering how to do that on the Panasonic 12-35mm.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't quite sure exactly what he was asking, because infinity focus just means focusing on the distance, like a mountain. The idea being that there's not really there's a negligible difference between focusing on infinity versus focusing on something that's really far away. When you focus on something in the distance, it's pretty much infinity. And some lenses can actually focus past infinity, which is problematic, because you may focus beyond anything. Everything's out of focus because you've gone too far. So sometimes people talk about calibrating infinity focus on a lens so you can't go past that point. But it turned out, in emailing back and forth, he wasn't talking about that. He was actually wondering how to focus on everything at once. So, do you know what we would call that?
I mean, that would just be having infinite depth of field?
Yeah, just like a very deep field. It's called deep focus, to have everything in focus. And that's a function of the aperture. So I just told him...
Sure.
You can close down your lens to maybe like f/11 or something, and you'll find that the things that are close to the camera and far away will all relatively be in focus.
Nice.
But of course, the consequence is it's much darker. So you'll need lights, or you'll need high ISO or something.
All right, we've got an email here from Ernest, and he wants to know how to record high-quality sound for a talk show involving 10 people.
So this is... This is a question that I feel like I got a lot when I was in television. And because we would go set up a shoot and people would talk about having 5 or 10 people or something. And that to me is a nightmare for having to set up. Because one, like I don't have that many microphones. And so I always try to change the shoot to fit the gear that I have if I can. But I think about this a lot. I guess if you went and rented 10 lavalier mics, I think lavalier mics would be the ideal way to...
That's exactly what I was going to say. For high-quality audio, get a lav on everybody.
And you probably don't want to deal with 10 wireless mics, because that could run into problems. But, 10 wired mics. I guess I can't think of an audio recorder that has 10 XLR inputs, but I can...
You're probably going to need a mixer, and you're going to have to mix it live.
I almost wonder, could you get, like, two... like audio recorders that each have 6 XLR inputs and then output both of them to a mixer or something? Would that even make sense? What would your approach be?
Well, I'd probably go lavs right into a mixer and the mixer right into a stereo recording.
I guess a lot
recording.
Of mixers have that many inputs,
Oh, yeah. Easy. Yeah. I mean, if you really think you're going to need the ability to adjust audio in post, then you would just need to go get a big multi-track recorder and record everybody's audio individually. But I think... for the most part, you can do really well with just one person mixing that live and making sure everybody sounds good.
Yeah, having a good live sound designer would be good.
Now, what would you do if you had to do 10 people but could not get a lav mic from everybody? If you needed to share mics. Say you had two mics.
Yeah. Well, they're actually doing an announcement behind me right now. They're like, last call for the screening, I guess.
But, you better get in there,
yeah,
Griffin.
Yeah, I gotta go. I gotta go. We gotta answer this question. I gotta go. So, I mean, the thing that comes to mind is just doing it like boom mic style, especially if you're shooting close-ups of everyone. You could probably have a roaming boom mic over everyone's head, and maybe two of them. Maybe have two boom mic operators.
God, that sounds like a mess.
But I also wonder, like, you come from a theater background. Like, what were those mics that they would always hang in theaters from above? They look like lav mics.
Yeah, you can do, they're called choir mics, okay, that you hang down. What I'm thinking, though, is if you've got 10 people talking, like if you're sitting around a table or something like that, yeah, then they've got these tabletop mics that you could put in front and pick up kind of a wide swath of the table. You kind of see them in conference rooms and things like that.
Yeah.
So that'd be the other thing I look at.
Yeah, I've often thought about those. You sit in conference rooms, you see those little flat. In fact, they kind of had those, like, they look like the floor mics for theater.
Yep, exactly.
They would just sit flat, yeah. That's one place I was always afraid of, though, yeah.
But for the best audio, try and get a mic on every person.
Yeah.
Do a little bit more work. You're definitely going to need a mixer, but it's going to be worth it.
And, you know, there's an appeal to doing live things like that where you get all 10 people at once, but depending on your project, if you can, you know, if there's any editing involved, is there a way that you don't shoot it with all 10 people at once? Maybe you can make it feel like 10 people were in a room. Although, I don't know, maybe you really need that truly live interaction.
Well, that's it. That's all the questions, my friend.
Yeah.
We did it again.
We'd have a shortage of questions, but they keep pouring in.
They keep coming in. Keep them coming, people. Well, I'm excited for my G85. Hopefully I can announce that it has at least shipped on the next episode. Right now I just wait.
Yeah, so you don't think you won't be filming with it next week?
I don't know if it ships in the next couple of days, but it's not in stock yet, so probably not. Did I tell you I also ordered the 12 to 35?
Oh, yeah, that I was about to ask, because I thought you meant you were going to get that instead of the 12 to 60. But the camera comes with the 12 to 60. It's almost a free lens.
Exactly. It's actually retails at $450 or something.
That's what I mean, is that you get it for $100.
Exactly.
Of course you'd get the kit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll probably put that on eBay right away and just sell it as a new lens. Then I'll have the 12 to 35, which is that constant f/2.8. I was really torn between the Leica 12 to 60 that was f/2.8 to f/4, but I never shoot at f/4. It's never a wide enough aperture for me. So I was like, half the zoom range is worthless anyway, so why don't I just get the constant f/2.8?
And what's the, did you say the price is the same on those two lenses?
So there's the 12 to 35 version 2 that came out at, where were we? I was there when they announced it.
At NAB.
At NAB, yeah.
Yeah.
That's $1,000, but you can still get the version 1 at $300 off. So I got it for $699.
Were you buying a used lens or a new lens?
New.
Oh, wow.
B&H still had it in stock, so you could pick either the version 1 or the version 2. And I did some research, and it sounds like they're basically identical, and there's a firmware upgrade for the older one that gives you almost everything that the new one has. So I was like,
yeah,
I'll save the $300 and
get the older one. Yeah, I think it's a great deal to go with the old one. I mean, I guess I should be promoting the new lens for Panasonic, but
the old
12 to 35 is great. Yeah, and if you can get a deal on it. And actually, I think, you know, lenses hold on to value so much, I bet you could sell that in 3 years for $100 less.
Sure, easy. I've still got the 14-140, you know? These lenses don't go bad. I mean, they're...
And if you buy lenses used and then sell them used a year or two later, you pretty much are renting lenses for free, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you don't damage them. And I do beat up my lenses, but I don't think I've ever damaged the glass.
I was just going to say, from what we've heard about you and hacksaws, I don't think I'd want to buy one of your used lenses. But.
Yeah, maybe stay away from my eBay.
Alrighty, my friend.
It's been good talking
to you. Safe travels home.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again next week.
You can go relax in your own bed for a week, and then you're off to Kazakhstan.
Yep, on to Kazakhstan, yeah. Barely get any time to rest.
Alright, well, we will chat with you next week.
Yeah, Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
We're fine, but I should have put in new SD cards, so I'm going to run out in 11 minutes.
This is what we deal with every episode now, is Griffin cannot manage his storage space.